Ladies and gentlemen, this is Pitching to Contact, where we throw 60-mile-per-hour heaters with sync because we cannot replicate Garrett Cole's stuff. My name is Rich. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Peyton Treywick. Treywick, what's happening, dude?
I'm doing good, bro. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. You have me, like, waiting up real late for you, man. It's like 12:30 over here. What's up?
I was actually waiting on you because you were finishing a paper.
This is true. But you had a test due midnight.
Yeah,
which you completely forgot about until like 2 hours before it was due. How does that even happen?
Well, I made a 96 on it, so we're just gonna pretend that I did it yesterday.
Oh, geez, you got your mark back already?
I did. Well, it was online, so like it grades itself as soon as I turn it in. It's kind of nice, actually. I was kind of nervous, and then it spat the grade back out to me, so that was nice.
Jeez. See, that actually makes me really upset that you were nervous, because you're all the way down in Arkansas, and I'm all the way in Canada, and I just can't hold your hand while you're nervous, and it makes me feel kind of bad.
If it makes you feel bad, it makes me feel worse, buddy.
Well... Anyways, dude, let's get rolling. We got a lot to cover, and you got to be up in like 6 hours.
I do.
I should probably be up around that time too. So, what are we talking about today? What's the plan?
I guess we didn't talk about this. I figured we'd go a little DS review, just a little quick AL and LCS. Kind of check in on our World Series predictions, see how those are going.
I don't want to talk about those.
Oh, okay. No. Well, mine's still intact. Wait. I didn't know about yours.
Wait, I actually have a super novel idea.
Okay.
Why don't we talk about baseball?
I think that'll work.
Okay.
I'm a big baseball guy.
Okay. So let's first talk about my World Series pick, because a year ago, I said the Atlanta Braves. It was like sometime in November. I said the Atlanta Braves will win the 2019 World Series, and they blew two late leads in this series and ruined my life.
Let's talk about it. I'm gonna go ahead and say I told you so, because I did call the Cardinals in five. So there's that.
Dude, that's such BS. They should have won game four. I don't know what happened.
They had a meltdown. You want to talk about game five?
I don't want to talk about game five. Nothing happened in game five, man. The game was over in 26 minutes.
It was. I was at work at the radio station here on campus, and we turned on the guy I work for is a Cardinal fan, and he turns on the TV and he just starts freaking out, screaming like a little girl. I think he was kind of blown it out of proportion, but I looked, I was like, wow, okay, he must turn the game on. I was like, I figured it was like 3-0. It was 10-0, two outs. I was like, oh Jesus. I was like, there's no way that's right. And then I look, and what amazed me is they didn't hit a home run, a single home run the whole inning. I thought that was crazy.
You know what's the crazy thing? Like, I consider myself a betting man, and when I saw the score after the first inning, I was so confident to say that this game's over. I was like, that's it. It's done. Cardinals are going to win.
And Mike still put in defensive replacements in the bottom of the first. he put Harrison Bader in. I think it was for Dexter Fowler.
That's phenomenal. I love that.
Yeah.
And the final score is like 13-1. So I blame it on, I think Bader was the reason why it wasn't 14-13 final at the end.
That's true. Bader really held us together defensively throughout the whole game. That was a very impressive move by Schill to go with him so early, considering he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Dude, that was such a troll move.
Dude, I laughed. I was sitting there. I was like, all right, let's go see if Atlanta, how flat they come out offensively after that. And then they cut away. They do like the normal, like, comes back. They start showing the people, like, on TV that just came into the game. I was like, this man just put subs in. Like, this man literally just made defensive substitutions. Like, and it's the first inning. It's like, this is incredible.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
That must be the first time ever. No, when he did it, I was like, that is incredible. yeah, whenever he did it, I was like, this is awesome. Like, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah. Yeah, that made me very sad. I really wanted Atlanta to get it done. You know who didn't really get it done? It was a dude who plays for the Canadian national team. Freddie Freeman sucked, man.
Yeah, he did not play well. Yeah, speaking of not playing well, dude, it was Pollock as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that, dude. Dude, this was a super. At the very least, this was a very, very fun NLDS and ALDS. Like,
oh, it was. Maybe, it was incredible.
Yeah, not so much the one series in the ALDS, which just was a complete one-sided affair. Mm-hmm. But everything else was just so much fun up until 10-0 in the top of the first inning. But I guess you weren't really too shocked by what happened at Atlanta and St. Louis series. I'm guessing you're going to pick St. Louis to win in round two.
Well, I did roll with it. Yeah, I did. I had him go to the World Series. We talked about it on the last pod, so I am going to stick with that. I think it'll be the kind of same keys it was. This last series. Sorry, I couldn't figure out how I was going to word that. This last series, you know, you just got to get to the bullpen. I think you get to the Nationals bullpen. I think it'll be really hard for them to push the envelope again, bringing in guys like Strasburg and Scherzer in for like one inning relief appearances, like they had been doing. I think that'll make it kind of hard if they're able to like get them out of the game early, for them to kind of do that and actually have a real effect on the series. So I think I'm gonna stick with the Cardinals. I think overall they're a better team.
Yeah, and dude, we were so wrong about that Nationals Dodgers series. Yeah, I think we both predict. Dude, I think we both predicted 3-0 Dodgers.
We did. What was wrong with us? Well, Dylan was very quick to point out, like, as soon as he listened to the pod the next day, he's like, you guys are soft on the Nationals. We were like, dude, no way, like, whatever.
Dude, screw Dylan Anderson. He doesn't know baseball.
Yeah. Didn't work for the A's.
No, he didn't work for the A's. At least I called that one right. But yeah, dude, that Washington Dodgers series was nuts. And game five was essentially the wild card game all over again against the Brewers. Like it was absolutely crazy. And we'll talk about game five in a second. But dude, the Nationals looked really, really good. But the thing that I'm worried about when they get into that second round is when it's a 7-game series. How much are they going to ride Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin? Because at some point, fatigue is going to set in, and there's two extra games. So if it goes the distance, I mean, they're going to have to rely on some other guys. And
right.
Dude, I for 90% of that series, I thought the Nationals had four usable pitchers. It was those three guys and Daniel Hudson, who's a former Jay and a former Jays legend. We saw Fernando Rodney in there once. The TBS crew hyped him up, and then he gave up like four runs right after. We saw Tanner Rainey throw like one pitch, and that's about it. And we saw Sean Doolittle close it out. But it just seems that they rely so heavily on three dudes, and at some point they're going to have to trust their other guys. Unless they can make quick work out of the Cardinals, which I think you and I both think that's not going to happen.
I think it's going to be tough for them, particularly if they don't use the bullpen, especially as little as they did last series. So I was actually just going through and looking at how many innings that their bullpen outside of, you know, Doolittle and Hudson really accounted for. So I've got maybe 5 to 7 innings with Rainey and a little bit of Fernando Rodney at game four. I didn't really go back and look at 1 and 2 yet, but I was just kind of checking, flipping through that right there. And it's going to be tough because, I mean, those guys like Corbin and Scherzer, I think Corbin honestly would have, to me, Scherzer and Corbin, I'll leave Strasburg out, but I think would have a better chance of being able to handle that kind of workload. That's just me personally. I didn't really like what I saw from Strasburg his last start. So, I mean, I just feel like it'll be kind of hard for him to rebound and not have that fatigue, where I didn't really see it affecting the other two guys as much. Scherzer, I mean, he just made a couple bad pitches. I mean, that stuff's going to happen. I mean, look at Kershaw threw a ball down and into Rendon and he hits it out of the yard. And so, I mean, like, that kind of stuff is going to happen. So I wouldn't really, you know, take the fatigue too much into it until they start leaving balls up in the zone. And that's what Strasburg started to do. So I think that'll be the only issue.
Yeah, and speaking of that one pitch that that Kershaw threw to Rondon, do you think that was a bad pitch? Because I think that was a really, I think that was a really good pitch, and I made a tweet about it earlier. Dude, I thought it was a great pitch, and I think what a lot I noticed somebody on Twitter, I forget who it was, I think it was Matt, but he made a point that it was a bad pitch because that's not a good spot for when you face one of the top three hitters in baseball. Like, that's JD Martinez's bread and butter. That's Rondon can hit that. But I think that's more so the fact that you're throwing to one of the top five best hitters in baseball. So it's more so that you just lost the fight against one of the top guys in the world. So you just got to tip your cap to him, you know? I think Kershaw made the right pitch there. He missed his spot completely to Soto, one at bat later, but that pitch to Rondon, I mean, that's just a great piece of hitting, and people shouldn't really hate on Kershaw for that. There's nothing you can really do about that. You made a good pitch and kind of lit you up.
No, and those are two of the better hitters that the National League has to offer. And that pitch to Rondon was down and in. It was a slider, and it was a little bit in, and it was down as well. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was, you know, just slightly under the zone. Like, I mean, there was quite a bit of room there, and he just got the barrel down and just pulled it out of the yard. And then the pitch to Soto, I mean, that you're going to make back a couple bad pitches. He just happened to make him pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that putting it on Kershaw and saying, like, he's not good in the postseason, like, if he throws that ball in the zone to Rondon, he's going to do the same thing with it if it's in that bottom quadrant, that bottom corner quadrant in the zone. So, I mean, that I just don't understand where everybody's like, oh, he can't perform. Like, that whole inning, he made one bad pitch, and he made him pay for it. The other one was just a great piece of hitting. There was nothing you could do about that. Nothing.
Well, here's the thing. In close to 160 playoff innings pitched, he has a negative F war. And an ERA of right around 4.5. But at what point will we just stop using Clayton Kershaw out of the bullpen? This is a dude who's... And here's the thing, dude. Some guys can adjust. Some guys can't. It genuinely seems like Kershaw just can't. And why are we... This guy starts his entire life. That's what he does. And then the playoffs, we just throw him into a different situation that he's not used to.
And expect him to thrive,
You know? So, and in this situation, came out in the seventh inning, I believe it was seventh, struck out a dude on three or four pitches. It was quick. Comes out, makes a good pitch to Rondon. What can you do about that? He really made just one bad pitch that entire outing. And... I mean, he threw it to one of the best baseball players in the world. It happens. But, you got to not do that. And I know when you're Dave Roberts, your hands are kind of tied because you have Clayton Kershaw. This is one of the greatest pitchers in baseball history. He gives up a bomb to Anthony Rondon. Are you actually going to take him out after that? It's Clayton freaking Kershaw. You know, you can't do that. You made a good pitch. You messed up. It's Clayton Kershaw. It's not like it's Joe Kelly. You got to keep him in the game for one more guy, especially a lefty-on-lefty matchup, and you just messed up. But, dude, we got to stop using Clayton Kershaw in the bullpen, especially the Dodgers, man. Like, I know it's Kershaw, and I keep on saying this, but you got a much better bullpen now. You have more depth than you had in years prior where you had no choice. You had to throw out Clayton Kershaw. You had to use him on short rest. But at this point, you don't have to do that. It's just you in my mind, you could have used, I don't care about the 100 pitch limit. Maybe Buehler was winding down a little bit, but you could have used him to get out of the seventh and even face Rondon in the top of the eighth and then put Kolarik in to face Soto, you know? Or you could have put in Kenta Maeda to finish out the seventh, face Rondon, Kolarik to face Soto, which is the only reason why he's on the roster, is to face this one dude late in games. Like, if you don't use him in that moment, come on. And then you have Kenley Jansen.
What's he on the roster for? Yeah.
Exactly. And then you can put in Kenley Jansen for a four-out save, you know? You don't need Kershaw there. And I know it's your guy for a decade, and he's one of the greatest of all time. But the Dodgers do such a great job at putting people in the right situation for them to succeed. I don't know why they deviate from that because of, for Clayton Kershaw.
When it counts. Yeah.
Exactly. And when there's a track hit, like a track record of it just not paying out, you know?
Right.
Paying off.
Yeah. And so I want to go back and touch on this Kershaw point before I move into this next part. So I understand that, you know, he has like 4 or 5 ERA and, you know, blah, blah, like all this other stuff. My thing is that you have to look at like his starts. Like, I mean, he's had a couple bad starts in the postseason, but he's had good starts too. And I just don't understand where people are throwing the fact that he doesn't perform well out of the bullpen onto his shoulders. You know, like he's not, like you say, like he's a pitcher. Like if he could start, he could come out of the pen. But like coming out of the pen is a completely different animal. Like, sure, it's a shorter stint and you only have to get, you know, in most cases, unless you're a long reliever, 3 outs, 2 outs, you know, depending on your role. Like it's just different. You have to have a different mindset and, you know, you have to be able to do different things. And, you know, Kershaw's not programmed to do that way. He has like pregame stuff that he goes through, like all these different things that he's not able to do when he comes out of the pen. And you're asking a guy who makes, you know, just say 30 starts in a year to come out and be like, hey, so we know that you're a starter and this is what we pay you to do, but we don't have anybody better in our bullpen, so we're going to come to you for 2/3 of an inning.
Exactly.
But you can't. But you can't do your normal prep work, so you're not going to be in the same rhythm.
That
doesn't make any sense. Like, dude, like there are guys that can do it. Like, don't get me wrong, Madison Bumgarner. Like that's where this all really started, in my opinion. Like people think like, oh, it worked then, it can work now, but it's not the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. Bumgarner, from like what I've read, has the most basic pregame routine, and it can be duplicated in a bullpen.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have like any special stuff that he does.
Yeah. And I think Clayton Kershaw actually has a very elaborate pregame routine. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure he does. And yeah, man, dude, pitch, it's a different animal, man. Pitching as a starter and pitching out of a bullpen, or even how teams are starting to use starters now to just, what's it called? Oh my God, I'm losing my mind.
The opener.
Openers. Yeah, the opener. It's a different mindset having a guy come out throwing 2 innings and then having another, like a long man, come out to give you like 4 innings, like a bulk guy, you know? It's a completely different mindset that's a lot of pitchers are just not used to. And Clayton Kershaw has been doing the same thing for his entire career. And now you just want him to flip a switch and expect it to work out. And I think it's just, honestly, it's kind of sad how much hate he gets on social media from people, and LA Dodger fans are burning his jerseys and kicking it and stuff. But like, dude, this guy is one of the greatest pitchers of my lifetime. Yeah. And even now, when with his stuff diminishing, like he's throwing under 90 now, you look at his season, he's still insane. And the ERA close to 3, he still strikes guys out, obviously at a shorter clip. He still gets outs. He's still an uncomfortable at bat. Like, dude.
Yeah.
This guy's one of the GOATs. He's not, like, if I can't give you 5 pitchers off the top of my head that have had better careers and are better pitchers than Clayton Kershaw.
I can give you maybe one, and it just depends on how you want to look at it.
Is it Justin Verlander?
It's Justin Verlander. Yeah.
That's it.
And I totally think that's a valid point. Like I just don't understand where, like, for fans, I don't claim that you and I are like, you know, some of like the greatest young minds like in the sport or anything like that.
Why not?
Because I simply just don't feel like that's true. You might be. I don't feel like that about myself.
Fine.
But,
Let's be humble.
You can have that title. I think you're hiring.
Let's be humble, babe.
But yeah, but you know, I just don't understand where with fans there's just disconnect that he should be able to do that. You know, like there's just a lot of fans that just don't understand everything that goes into, you know, not even just baseball, like with basketball and football, especially football. You know, like that you see a guy like, and this is just a comparison here, so we don't have to spend long on this. Like Baker Mayfield, but like throws for 100 yards last week, or is it actually this week? It was Monday. Throws like 100 yards in a game. They're like, oh, he sucks. Like, you know, like my, the way I always look at it is like, bro, if you can't do any better than like, I don't ever cuss on here, but like, shut the fuck up. Like if you literally cannot do any better, and then like for, especially like playoff situations, like if a guy has a bad season, like was it Nathan Peterman that threw like 5 picks in a game? Of was it, like, last year, the year before? Yeah.
That's my guy. You know,
it's not in the playoffs, so nobody really pays attention other than the fact that the dude threw like 5 picks and a half. You know, but in the postseason, like a guy makes one bad pitch and people are ready to burn their house down, you know. Yeah. It's just, I feel like it's a testament to like a lot of fans really having a disconnect and not understanding how difficult it is to change roles like that. Yeah. Like now if he consistently had bad start after bad start after bad start, like, okay. But like, you're asking a guy to come in and do a, like, have a role that he literally does not do for 6 months. And if you want to include spring training, like seven and a half.
Yeah.
And you expect him to just show up and be able to just mow people down with a completely different mindset that he hasn't practiced. Like, you're pitching in front of 40,000 fans. You are screaming and yelling at a high leverage game. And you're supposed to be able to flip a different switch that you got to blow the dust off of. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Dude, I agree. And let's not forget, he's also doing it on short rest. So not only is it a different role, it's also on short rest. So you don't know what he does. You don't know what his side sessions are like. You don't know what he does in between outings. So, I just think, and you and I both, we haven't played an inning of pro ball. We sniffed the minors a little bit, but we've never pitched it.
I never played pro ball.
Can confirm, never played an inning of pro ball. But, I mean, some people who just haven't even played baseball, it's very unfair of them to just trash on one of the best to ever do it, you know? You can't do that. It's one thing to trash on a guy like Aaron Loop or Jacob Wagispack, two all-time greats of the Toronto Blue Jays, but don't do it to Clayton Kershaw. God damn it.
I saw somebody on Twitter throw a Jacob Wagispack.
Wagispack, come on, man.
Yeah, I don't know how to say it. I saw him throw the comp on him to
Walker
Tyler
Buehler?
Glass now. No, to Tyler Glass now today.
Oh.
I saw that.
I can throw a comp of Wagispack and Walker Buehler just because they look identical. Like
they kind of do.
Dude, they kind of look like the exact same person, only Walker Buehler has like a million times better stuff and a smaller nose.
I wanted to go on this point before we switch here. I meant to bring this up to you. So for the Dodgers, just hypothetically here. So I know... Yeah. This is something I've talked with in the college. So, as you remember, I was a student assistant on staff here at UCA last year. And this is something I kind of brought up to our pitching coach and our head coach. So, how do you feel about a guy like we'll just use Kenley Jansen as an example because he's a closer for the Dodgers, coming in a high leverage situation in the middle of the game? We'll just set up a fake scenario here just to kind of give, like, just to kind of tie it in. Say, you know, the Nationals yesterday would have had the bases loaded and one out and I don't know, it was just in the sixth inning, righty on righty matchup. And they turned to Kenley Jansen to get the last two outs of that inning. How does that make you feel?
I'm totally okay with it.
If the matchup makes sense, obviously,
if the matchup makes sense, but also, this is just a theory I've always idea I've always had in my mind for years now. Say it's the eighth inning, beginning of the eighth inning, and you're up 1-0, right? And you're about to face Rendon, Soto, let's say Trey Turner.
Rendon, 2-3-4.
And Soto. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and then the very next inning, you're facing Robles, Michael A. Taylor, and whoever, you know?
Yeah.
Why would you keep your best pitcher out of the pen, which is usually your closer, I would hope, for the ninth inning to face Michael A. Taylor and those guys when this is the game. The ball game is right here with Eaton, Rendon, and Soto. You got to get – those are the tough outs. If you get those outs, you can feel more comfortable going into the ninth. That's when more often than not, that's where the game is won. It's won the eighth inning. And I think too many managers – even though we're so forward-thinking in this day and age, are so concerned with getting their closer that save. And it's such a stupid statistic. And I think it's preventing us from thinking rationally. If the game is won or lost in the eighth inning when you're facing the three best guys in the lineup, why are you throwing up your setup guy when just, you know? And I don't think this is a similar situation to the Clayton Kershaw thing where you're changing up his role. You're with this, it's kind of like you're putting your closer in a big key situation out of the pen, and he should be ready. That's his role. It's not Clayton Kershaw's role.
Yeah, and see that's my thought process exactly. So like you can hand the ball to Kenley Jansen in the eighth and get those outs, because here's the thing, like the game can be saved at any point. Like if that is going to be the most crucial moment coming out of the bullpen at that point in the game, whatever, where it be 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, whatever. If that's where you need a big out, which is what your closers typically use for, to get big outs at the end of the game, like use him then. Like you can use him in the 8th and get Rendon, Soto, and Zimmerman or Trey Turner, whoever, out, and turn it and hand Joe Kelly the ball in the 9th and get Michael A. Taylor and Brian Dozier pitch hitting and whoever else. Like they can get those outs. I mean, granted, Joe Kelly didn't get Brian Dozier out last night, but you can hand the you can hand the ball to that guy and still feel comfortable, because if the innings were reversed, you wouldn't have brought Kenley Jansen in the 8th to face Michael A. Taylor and Brian Dozier and whoever else. You'd have brought Joe Kelly in and then gave the ball to Jansen at 9th to face those same three guys in Soto and all them. So I don't understand, if the innings are not for flip-flopped right there, why that doesn't seem the most, the easiest decision to make. If that is going to be the high-leverage moment, let your closer go out and get those high-leverage outs, because that's what you pay him to do. Dude, I don't care if it's Chapman. I don't care if it's, Craig Kimbrell, Kenley Jansen, Edwin Diaz, Ozuna. I don't care. Any of those guys, give them the ball and let them go get those high leverage outs. Because if that's not what you're paying them to do, then you don't have a true closer. I'm sorry, you don't. Yeah.
So, piggybacking off of that, do the Dodgers fire Dave Roberts or nah?
I don't think so.
I'll be honest. If the Dodgers fire Dave Roberts, it's an absolute embarrassment on the organization, and I don't think they're gonna do it. Like, I see a lot of people on Twitter calling for Dave Roberts. First of all, I'm seeing dudes like I'm in Toronto, man. So most of the people on my Twitter are like Toronto Blue Jay fans, right? And they're all calling for Dave Roberts' job when they have zero association to the Dodgers. And dude, Dave Roberts looks like the sweetest dude in the world. Never met him, but he looks like the nicest guy. Like, remember, I don't know if you watched that video of what's that dude's name who was called up when he was like 27 last year, Farmer,
the
guy who was in Cincy. Like that video, like touches
Kyle
your
Farmer.
Heart, man. Yeah, call Farmer. Like how Dave Roberts treats those types of situations. Like, come on, he's a sweetheart, man. Why would you call for his job? And I genuinely think Dave Roberts is one of the best managers in the game of baseball.
I'd give him top 3.
Yeah. Let's say he wins manager of the year this year. I don't know if he will or not, but if he does, I will be like, cool. That's fine. I think he's one of the best in the game at what he does.
Dude, if he got fired, the Padres, the Angels, the Mets, the Phillies, like every single team that has a managerial opening will call him. I don't care who it is. Every single team will call him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's the thing. If he gets fired, it's simply because the Dodgers need a scapegoat after their collapse. Because
who do you hire to replace Dave Roberts? Like, that man, literally, he understands analytics. He has great connections with the players. That's what all the signs point to anyways. I'm not in the clubhouse. I can't say that's completely true.
Yeah.
But you never hear about any issues in their clubhouse, nothing.
Exactly.
Like almost as if that clubhouse is perfect. And he has a great connection with the front office, like the analytics stuff. Like who can you hire that's gonna provide anything else? Like, I mean,
I'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, anybody you hire, unless you hire Joe Madden, and Joe Madden has his downfalls. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I just don't think there's a guy who can step into that office day one and make that team better. Yeah. I don't think there's anybody there or that's going to manage the game any differently. You think Bruce Bochy wouldn't have went to Kershaw in the 8th? You think whoever else wouldn't have went to Kershaw in the eighth. I mean, dude, no. If the front office wants to see Kershaw in the eighth, like, they're going to get Kershaw in the eighth. Like, I mean, they think that that's the right situation. All it takes is one guy from analytics or someone just to put that in his ear, like, hey, like, we think this is the best option. You know, like they're probably going to do it, especially if all the numbers point to that being a favorable matchup, you know, which I can't say that they did because I don't have them in front of me. But, like, he's not going to say no to that because he's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, and, like, hindsight's 20/20, but it's game five of an elimination game. Kershaw is bound to pitch at some point in that game. No way around it. If you're losing game five at home in the playoffs, you're going down with Clayton Kershaw. Just that simple. Because here's the thing. If, let's say, Clayton Kershaw didn't pitch in that game and they lost because Kenta Maeda blew it, or Kalara gave up like a three-run bomb to Soto and they lost 4-3. I mean, what's everyone going to say after the game? Like, you have Clayton Kershaw just chilling there and you don't use him, right? You lose a cleric and you have Clayton Kershaw who can face a lefty. Like, what the hell is wrong with you, you know?
Yep. You're not going to make anybody. You're never going to make everybody happy.
Yeah, funny how the world works. But all I know is that the Dodgers, out of any team in baseball, the Dodgers have the most players that have come up through the system.
Yeah.
They have an incredible group of players, some young, some a little older, and that's just, it just shows how great of an organization they are. Like, when it comes to organizations in terms of forward thinking and what they do on the player development level and the R&D level, it's the Astros and the Dodgers and then everyone else. And then you have, like, the Tampa Bay Rays and everyone else, you know? Yep. They're in their own league, and I think people should realize that before they judge anything that team does. They're a team that's gone to the playoffs for the last 10 years, you know? They're doing something right, even though they just can't be lucky enough to break through. But anyways, dude, we got to switch the topic and go to the ALDS, man.
Yeah, we need to, because we're already about 35 minutes in.
Yeah, this is true. What are our thoughts? Let's keep it quick with this series. What are our thoughts with the Twins and the Yankees series? Are the Twins just not the team you thought they were?
I don't think that's the case. I think for them, it's just they were just overmatched. The Yankees finally were able to put it all together. I mean, they played really well. That honestly might have been the best series that the Yankees have played all year. I really think if they're in the same division as my Red Sox or Blue Jays, like, I really think that's the best series they put together all year. You know, I mean, the Twins, man, like, they just couldn't get anybody. I'm not gonna say they couldn't get anybody out. It's just it was just a big inning. It just seemed like it was always a big inning, and they just couldn't work their way around it. Like, I mean, the pitchers minus like two innings of each game did pretty well. I mean, like, honestly, like, the Twins pitching wasn't that big of a deal. The Twins offense, I mean, they didn't play bad per se. Like, I just think the Yankees are that good.
Yeah. I think it's all another big thing that with the Twins, they were a 100-win team. But let's keep in mind that they had the Kansas City Royals, the Chicago White Sox, the Detroit Tigers, and the Cleveland Indians, who didn't really play that well for a big chunk of the season. And they played these teams, what, 18, 19 times a year or whatever the number is?
That
helps with that helps bump up that win number, you know? Meanwhile, the Yankees are playing the Red Sox. They're playing the Rays. That's pretty much it. That's still better than what the Minnesota Twins are playing, you know? So,
yeah.
And, dude, the Yankees, they're just a much better all-around team. Like, everywhere you look, they're kind of better. And it showed in that series. Like, the Yankees pretty much beat them in every aspect of the game.
Yeah, and you know what I think it is, too, and I'm going to draw this comparison, and I'm sure there's going to be people listening who are like, this makes no sense. But I think, like, if you want to look at it this way, so you go back to all the records we talked about that the Twins broke this year, like with home runs and all, remember, like, all those home run records we talked about, like all the multi-home run games. Like, they tried to beat the Yankees using the Yankees game. And the problem is you can't expect to do that when you have just, I mean, overall, it comes down to money. I mean, like, I'm just going to put it out there. In this aspect, it came down to money, because you have guys like James Paxton. You have guys like, Tanaka and I mean, just all these different insanely good pitchers. You know, Chapman out of the bullpen. Like, the Yankees bullpen is extremely good. You know, like, and like, their bullpen is going to be able to hold down the Twins' offense better than the Twins' bullpen is going to be able to hold down the Yankees' offense, because there's just there's more money being spent getting better players. They're using the same style of play with better players. I mean, that's just what it comes down to for me.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be interesting with this upcoming series, because when it comes to the bullpen, it's not just Chapman, man. You have Ottavino coming out of there.
Right.
You have Britton coming out of there. You have Chad Green coming out of there.
It's a lot of different looks.
Dude, got Jay Happ coming out of there now. He's not in the rotation anymore. Dude, they have a ton of guys they can throw at you, and it shortens the game for them. Like, they have Severino, who has some of the nastiest stuff on baseball, and they had him throw, like, what, 4 innings in one of the games?
Mm-hmm.
And then they just bridge the gap after that. They bridge it over to Chapman, and he comes in and throws 100, and it's over. But that takes us to the ALDS other series, which I thought was super interesting and a ton of fun. Just when I saw with this series, I saw this Jeff Passan tweet right before the series started, and he just tweeted out the pitching matchups going in, and you just see Morton versus Verlander, Greinke versus Snell, Gerrit Cole versus Glasnow, and you're just like, this is going to be sick, you know? And, it was a super fun series. Like, up until the final game where it just seemed like Cole just is so fucking good at baseball, but it was just a great series start to finish.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I was very surprised at how well the Rays played, especially, you know, once they got back to Tampa. I think that really, I mean, they were able to turn them. I'll say this. They were able to turn the page really well. You know, and they got to the bullpen. Like, they actually got to the bullpen a couple games, and they were able to get some wins out of it. You know, like I said, that Houston bullpen, man, it just isn't – it doesn't pack the same punch as some of the other teams, especially like the Yankees, you know. And I made the comment on the last pod we did. I said if they can get to the bullpen, like, they can maybe have a chance of squeaking this out. But I was like, if they let Verlander and Cole go 6, 7, 8 innings, like, there's no shot. Like, you don't get that many hittable pitches, especially off of Gerrit Cole as of late. Like, he has, like, it's like 6 or maybe like 0.57 ERA in the playoffs right now. Like, it's insane. You know, you can't expect to be able to score 3 runs off him. You can't expect to be able to score 1 run off him.
Dude, Gerrit Cole is the best pitcher in baseball.
Hands down.
Dude, it's not even close right now. Gerrit Cole is about to make so much money. He's going to be the highest paid pitcher in baseball history. He's just off the charts good. He's untouchable, man.
I think you're going to see for the first time in forever a bidding war between teams that are like actually like large market teams trying to get him to come play for them. I think this will be one of the few times we actually see that this offseason, because it's not going to be like one of those Keiko or Kimbrel things like, oh, he wants too much money. Like you literally cannot say that. That man should be getting blank checks handed to him. Especially by contenders, absolutely no way that you can justify not paying him.
Yeah, and the thing with Keuchel and Kimbrel is Keuchel's a guy who throws 89, and while he's an outlier, he's kind of you can't really justify giving him a bunch of term because he's now getting older and his stuff is not that great. Kimbrel, he didn't look so good with the Red Sox when they won that World Series, and he's getting older as well. He's a reliever. But with Gerrit Cole, it just seems like this is his prime. And his window to be so good at baseball is he has a number of years left, it looks. And that guy can throw – dude, he was throwing 99 on pitch number 100 today. It's unbelievable, you know?
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if – assuming he stays healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 years – we're talking about Gerrit Cole as this has been the most dominant stretch by a major league pitcher in just MLB history. Because what he did this year alone and what he's doing in the playoffs is just absolutely nuts, man.
Oh, it's insane. And I kind of worry. So he obviously wasn't this this good during his time in Pittsburgh. You know, so I wonder if when he leaves Houston, and this might sound insane to some people, I wonder when he leaves Houston if he'll be able to keep it up. I wonder if their approach and just everything that they're doing down there is going to hold for him to be the same Garrett Cole that he is now, whenever he doesn't have the same, I'm not going to say the same amount of help in terms of like technology and data, because really every team should have access to it with the amount of money they have and, you know, the people they can hire. But I wonder if it's going to be to the same degree, because you saw like Charlie Morton, like he was able to maintain it, but he went to Tampa Bay and they're literally doing almost the exact, I'm not going to say the exact same of development, but their pitchers are on the same level to an extent in the roles and how they're developing them. Like, they don't have a bunch of Garrett Coles, but they have a lot of pitchers that are able to get outs and do it very efficiently because of how they're using their data. It's just not, they just don't have them. They don't have starting, they have them coming out of the pit, which is their model. Yeah.
And that's the thing with a guy like Garrett Cole. First of all, I think being alongside a guy like Justin Verlander in there rubbed off on Garrett Cole a lot. You can see a ton of similarities between the two of those guys. And just after being with the Houston Astros, who are so analytically driven, who have really just made him so much better than he ever was. Like, his spin rate has just jumped each year. Like, last year jumped from what his average is, and then this year it even jumped even higher than that. I think just based on his experience with Houston, I don't think he's going to go to a team in free agency that's just not on the same path to get to that Houston Astros level. And every team can say that they're trying to become the Houston Astros, but I mean, it's very easy to tell which team is getting there and which team is lagging behind. Yeah. And I think for a guy like Garrett Cole, he's going to prioritize that. Like, if he's going into a meeting and he's going to get money, like insane money wherever he goes, I think a big priority for him in free agency is going to be, he wants to see a plan from a team, and he wants to see a team just really just lay it out there on the table. This is what we plan on doing for you. This is the idea we got to keep you as effective as possible for as long as we can, and this is why you should sign with us. And I think with his experience in Houston, he's not going to settle for like a dumb plan, because he's seen what he's capable of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say, I think it'll be interesting. I just wonder what Houston's going to be able to give him, and where they're going to prioritize like paying some of their future players, like you know, guys like Springer and all them, versus paying Cole now and dealing with that later.
Yeah,
I wonder how they'll prioritize that. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Garrett Cole is more valuable than anyone on the Houston Astros right now that are just approaching free agency.
Yeah.
It's just, he's going to be so expensive, man. And I think one of the reasons they traded for a guy like Aaron Sanchez, and he's hopefully going to be healthy next year and get back on track, and now they traded for a guy like Zach Greinke, who has an extra year of control after this. I think it's just because there's a real possibility that they just won't have the money to re-sign a guy like Garrett Cole, because dude, they're paying Correa, they're paying Bregman, they're paying Justin Verlander now, they're paying Altuve. I mean, George Springer's gonna come off the books shortly. You gotta figure out how to pay him. Greinke's still making money. Dude, they're paying a ton of guys, and at some point, I don't know what Jim Crane's gonna do, but you're gonna have to figure something. You can't just pay everybody at some point.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see, like you said, I think what'll happen is he'll walk, they won't be able to re-sign him, and they'll probably, if I were to guess, they'll try to move Sanchez into a starting role, try to develop him, and not into the same guy that Garrett Cole is, because I just don't think it's possible, but you know, to a starter that can get outs efficiently using, the stuff, the programs and all that they're using to develop these guys now with all the analytics and, all the other, just standard like pitching development stuff that they're doing, and maybe try to push some of that money in the bullpen, because I think if there's a definite need right now, that's where it is.
And especially if the Houston Astros go on to win the World Series this year, I think at that point maybe it's a little bit of ego, but they're going to look at themselves as, we can take any pitcher for less money and make him a serviceable starter without needing to pay a guy like Garrett Cole so much money. Like they did to Charlie Morton, and they sent him off to Tampa Bay. They, whatever they did with Dallas Keuchel, and then he's on his way. Obviously, Gerrit Cole is much better than both of those guys have ever been, but I think that's kind of what the plan is with a guy like Aaron Sanchez. They're going to get – I mean, Forrest Whitley's going to be up here soon too. He's probably going to be up here by 2020. And at that point, it's like, do you spend all that money on a guy like Gerrit Cole? Or do you just – you have Justin Verlander, you have Greinke, hopefully Aaron Sanchez is healthy, hopefully Forrest Whitley puts everything together. You got – and then you have Lance McCullers coming back. You know, there's your rotation right there, you know? Like, at that point, you got to focus on using the money wisely and just using it on a bullpen, because that seems like the spot that they're going to be lacking. I think Gerrit Cole is just – it's funny he's facing the Yankees right now, because I think that's where he's going to end up. Because the Yankees are one of those. Dude, I think the Yankees. One, he grew up a Yankee fan. He was drafted by the Yankees. The Yankees are a very analytically driven franchise. They're up there. I think if he goes somewhere and the Yankees obviously have the money to spend, I think that's the spot.
Huh. Okay. I mean, I'll keep that in the back of my mind.
I would love it for him to come to the Blue Jays, and I will. Oh, yeah, dude, I'd empty out my piggy bank for Gerrit Cole, but, I mean, for him to just come to the Jays, but I think it's going to be the Yankees. But that being said, how do you think this series is going to go? Yankees versus Astros.
Can we do the NL first?
Yeah, let's go NL.
I need to think about that one, because that's going to take me a second.
Sure. So, I guess the NL, you got the Cardinals. I'm just gonna roll with the Nats just so we have some
competition. We have some differing,
dude. We need competition. I think the Washington Nationals are genuinely fun. Just watching them play, I think it's awesome. I think it's super funny what Bryce Harper did to them, and that introductory press conference he had with the Philadelphia Phillies. I think this is just perfect for them to make it to the World Series. And I don't know how they're going to do it. Fatigue might be a big thing for them in this series. But, dude, they have – I think that lineup is insane, especially the very top of it with Trey Turner and Adam Eaton and then Rendon and Soto. Dude, Rendon and Soto are just nuts. Those two guys single-handedly can carry this team. That's essentially what they did this past series. They just carried them. And then Howie Kendrick with a big bomb. Howie Kendrick, as bad as he is at everything to do with fielding, he's a solid underrated bat that they have in that lineup. And then they have some pop coming off the bench with guys like Dozier. They have good outfielders with Robles and Michael A. Taylor. I think they're going to figure it out somehow. I won't be surprised if they lose, because if they lose, it's simply because their pitching just falls off a cliff and is fatigued. But I just think they have a lot more offensive punch than the Cardinals. And I think Scherzer, Corbin, and Strasburg can put something together to help the Nationals figure it out. And I'll go Nationals in six.
Okay. I don't think that's a bad prediction at all. I'm gonna go.
So Whoa! If this was a bad prediction, would you say it to my face?
Well,
on our own pod.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If I think you're wrong, I'm gonna let you know. I let you know I thought you were wrong about the Braves, and here we are.
I have to go with the Braves, man. I have to. Dude, I didn't even know Josh Donaldson was going to be a Brave when I made that prediction. I just have to go with them.
Hey, well, I mean, I'm glad you went with them. I'm also glad that I was right, and they're not here right now.
Yep. Anyways, Homer, give me your prediction.
So I'm gonna go Cardinals, and here's my thing. I don't know how many games it'll take, because I feel like this series could go seven. I really do. So I'm going to go Cardinals in seven, and I think the deciding factor is going to be the bullpen for the Cardinals again. That was what I pegged as last series. I said, you know, as long as they can get five, six innings out of their starters, it's like, I think they'll be okay. The offense, like I had said before, towards the stretch at the end of the year, I thought that they were able to put it together. a lot better, get some more timely hits, and that proved to be true this whole last series in Atlanta. You know, they did a really good job executing runners in scoring position, in my opinion, given the situation and how hard it is to do those things in the playoffs, just with the different atmosphere and, you know, a lot of different pressure. So I think if they can get to, especially get in the Nationals bullpen, especially in like the stretches where they play like back-to-back games, like especially on like the front end of like game one, game three, and then game six, I think if they can get in the bullpens there, I think that puts them in a really good position, because, you know, you get, if you chase Anibal tomorrow in third and force them to burn their bullpen up and then get to whoever their Saturday starter is going to be, I think that puts the Cardinals in a really good spot with how deep they are on the mound and how much of a veteran presence they have in the lineup. I think that puts them in a good spot. So I'm going to go Cardinals. I'm going to go Cardinals in seven.
Dude, and I listened to every single word you said, but I'm just on my phone right now on Instagram, and I'm watching highlights of Kawhi Leonard's debut with the Los Angeles Clippers, and it's making me feel somewhat weird way.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad that I'm such a high priority for you, and that makes me feel good.
Dude, I'm podcasting with you at 1 a.m, man. You're always like the top All priority.
Right. That's fair. Hey, and we're getting an Uber together whenever we land at the winter meetings. Because we land within an hour of each other.
That's awesome. And the funny thing is, we can wait for Caleb, but I just don't want to.
Yeah. What time does he land?
I don't know. Who cares?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if you don't know, I don't know either.
Whatever. He'll figure it out. Anywho, what's going to happen in the ALCS? Do you want me to go first, and you can think a little more?
Yeah, dude. I really don't know. Just keep going.
Just so you know. Dude, I know, like, it seems like you're really, really struggling. At the end of the day, our prediction doesn't matter. Just know that.
It doesn't.
You know, it doesn't. And hopefully, yeah. I'm going to go with the Astros. I think their offense is an absolute cheat code. Dude, that lineup with Springer, Altuve, Bregman, Correa, Gurriel, Brantley, it just keeps coming at you, dude. And facing Verlander and Gerrit Cole, and I think Greinke's bound to bounce back. I just can't picture Gerrit Cole losing in the playoffs, you know? And I can't picture Justin Verlander losing twice, two games in the series. Yeah. So, I mean, with just those, between those two guys, you have three wins, you know? And then you hope that somebody else, like, picks up one more. I just can't, dude. I think if anyone can just stifle the Yankees offense, it's these guys. And if they're, I mean, I trust the Houston Astros offense. If they can build up like a good enough lead going into the later innings when you need like the eighth and ninth inning to be closed out by the Houston bullpen, I think they're going to figure it out. Like you're right. The Houston Astros do have questions at the back of that bullpen. But when you have a guy like Justin Verlander who can still give you 6-7 innings, and Gerrit Cole can give you 6-7 innings, and Greinke, who realistically can give you 6-7 innings as well, it's not like you need to piece everything together. Like the Tampa Right. Bay Rays literally have to go inning by inning, or the Yankees, they have to piece things together from like the fourth or fifth inning onwards. The Astros don't have to do that. It Yeah. would be nice for them to have that option, but I mean, Will Harris is a solid option to give you one inning in the eighth, and Osuna is a solid option to give you a one inning in the ninth. Obviously, he's been kind of up and down the stretch, but you got it. He's done it before. You got to trust him in these situations. Hopefully Rodon can get you like a couple of outs here and there. Presley, I know he's been hurt at the end of the season, and he didn't look too good in his play at debut. They don't have that Charlie Morton guy who they had when they won the World Series who can give you a few innings, and you don't have Lance McCullers coming out and throwing only knuckle curves. But because of the power they got in their starting rotation, I think they don't need to do too much with the bullpen. They understand that the bullpen is the weakness, and they hide it by how good their starters are.
Yeah.
With the Yankees, it's like I don't trust their starters to give you four or five perfect innings. And I trust a Houston Astros offense to get it done in those in that time span before the Yankees bullpen comes in. So that's why I'll go. I think it's still going to be a cool series. I'll go Houston Astros in seven.
Okay. So here's where I stand. So I listened to what you said, and I was thinking pretty close along the same lines. So I think the big thing is going to be if the Yankees offense can actually get the ball in play at a rate to where it gives them a chance to get like men on base and score some runs. Because here's the thing, like I get it, you know, in this day and age, especially off a guy like just, you know, throwing back to this Gerrit Cole example I used earlier, we are in an age where, you know, you're only going to get, you know, and it will just say five innings from Gerrit Cole, we'll say 3 to 4 actual like hittable pitches. I'm talking about pitches like you could actually drive, get a good barrel on and maybe get out of the yard or put into a gap. You know, he's not going to walk a lot of guys. You know, I think he walked one tonight. So I think if the Yankees can capitalize on mistakes, it'll give them a chance, like a legitimate chance to win this series. But I think that the Astros pitching is just going to be able to hold its own, you know, like it has all year. You know, I think Zach Greinke is end up going to be like a really big X factor in the series because just the way like the rotation they're going to line up, him giving you a good start against whoever, you know, they roll out there in game two or three for the Yankees. I think him being able to give you good starts is what's actually going to put them over the top because you know what you're going to get from Verlander. You know what you're going to get from Cole. Mm-hmm. You definitely know what you're going to get from Cole. Verlander, I mean, he might have, you know, if he's still a little fatigued, you know, he was gassed on short rest. I'm curious how much that'll actually affect him. I honestly don't think it will too much. So I think a guy like Greinke is actually going to be very crucial in this series because if he could come in and give you 7 strong innings, you know, I think that is where it's going to really put the Astros over the top and make it hard for the Yankees offense to get anything rolling because they're a momentum offense. I mean, they really are. Like, when guys are getting whatever they're hitting, like everybody's clicking on all cylinders. Like, they're pretty much all or nothing. So, I think if he could shut them down and force, you know, and they can force – sorry, there was a car drove by. I'm doing this pod outside in the dark. if they can force the Yankee offense to capitalize on those very minimal mistakes that they're going to make, then the Yankees aren't going to have a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, with that being said – Astros in how many games?
6.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can get behind that. At least we agree on something.
Yeah.
This is, should we wrap this up, man? It's almost 1:30.
Yeah, it's 12:15 by time. I got to be up at 6. I still got to take a shower. Pretty sure my dog's gonna want to cuddle, so I'm gonna have to do that for a solid 15 minutes. So, yeah.
When are we gonna
wrap this up?
When are we gonna cuddle, dude?
Hey, San Diego's coming soon. Side note here. Go ahead.
Yeah, what's up? What's the side note?
I'm looking at playoff tickets right now for Game 1 in St. Louis tomorrow because it's only like 5.5 hours away. And I'm thinking about dropping $100 and getting tickets on the first level down the first baseline. But I don't know if I can afford $100 on the first baseline for the game tomorrow. I really want to go. I've never been to a playoff game. I want to go so bad.
Oh, my God. 5.5 hours to watch a team that isn't yours?
Yeah.
Dude. You do you, man. I don't know if I would do that. I would do it for the Jays. I don't know if I'd do it for, say, the St. Louis Cardinals.
So, fun fact, the cheapest tickets they have right now for tomorrow is $54. The cheapest tickets for Game 2 in St. Louis is $62. I want you to guess how much the cheapest tickets for Game 3 are. In Washington.
In Washington, it's probably going to be a ton because it's their first NLCS. So I'll say probably like $120.
$179 cheapest seats I got.
Dude, that's crazy. And like, because I'm Canadian, man, I'm thinking in these tickets are in U.S. dollars. In Canadian, that's close to $250. Like right around $250 Canadian dollars for tickets. That's out of this world. That's a hard pass for me.
If you want tickets on the, I think this is the fifth row behind home plate in D.C., $1,651.
Dude, that's my left kidney right there.
Oh, you got, if you want right behind the Nationals on deck circles on the eighth row, over $2,000 for one seat.
Dude, that's student debt. I got to pay off that first.
Dude, that's insane. Three tickets would be $6,000.
Yeah, that's definitely not happening. I'm just going to go ahead and live my life.
I'm going to sleep in.
Yeah, I'll watch the game in my basement and
crap open a beer.
I'm going to crap open a beer and call it a day.
Heck yeah.
Dude, I think we got to go. I got to get to bed, man. You got to get into the shower. Cuddle your dog, get out of that garage. So this has been fun. We'll be back at some point in the near future, hopefully, assuming our lives go well and we don't die. Man, this has been Pitching to Contact, another great epi from yours truly, Rich and Treyway. Until next time.